So I should get one thing out on the table from the outset. Because look, I'm very accustomed to the reaction that I get from the public to my most distinguishing characteristic, my lush brown hair. Okay, so you're laughing. So it's not so lush and maybe not so brown. But obviously the most distinguishing characteristic is my long white cane, which identifies me unequivocally as a blind person. And it's very interesting going through life as a blind person. It's kind of like going through an anthropologic study of social behavior. The reactions I get on a daily basis ranges from, on the one hand, invisible, nameless, silent hands reaching and pulling and prodding from nowhere, it seems, out to direct me to a vacant seat on the MTA bus that maybe was just vacated by an 89-year-old lady with 4 grocery bags and a stroller. No thanks, I'm going to go ahead and sit in the back. So that's one of the reactions that I get. On the other end of the scale, it's, you are so amazing. Wow, amazing, that's cool. I never was amazing before. What you think about, what do they mean by that? I get up in the morning and I put on my own clothes, go out to work, catch the bus to work, and I reverse it in the evening. Bet you can't do that. Pretty amazing. The truth is, it's somewhere in the middle of that. I mean, there are some blind guys who are pretty amazing, and there are some blind guys who are pretty much not amazing. You've met them; they're around sometimes, you know. The full scale, you know, the full spectrum. But I did get to participate 10 years ago in a truly amazing and historic event that I think forever contributed to changing what it really means to be blind. So it happened to have coincided with a point that was the lowest point in my life. That's a subject for another Stoop storytelling. But I got a call on December the 27th, 2000, from the president of the National Federation of the Blind. Very well-known, long-time disability rights attorney, not someone given to corny jocular behavior like I am usually. So I don't get a call from him, you know, just every day, you understand. And he asked me, he says, I was on vacation in northern Pennsylvania at the time. He says, you remember this guy, Eric Weinmayer, the mountain climber? I sort of put it out of my mind. I'd heard him speak at conventions before. He's this crazy dude that was, you know, trying to put up a 10 on Denali and 40 below temperatures and climbing vertical ice faces. That's nuts. I didn't just sort of vaguely listen to that. And I said, yes, I remember. Says, well, he's going to try to climb Mount Everest, and we need somebody that knows something about blindness and computers to be at base camp during the climb. Do you want to go? What? What? And you know how your ears do this little trick. You know, maybe I misheard. You know, he said, I mean, Mount Everest is in Nepal. I thought maybe it was Naples. I don't know. You know, Nepal. So this is crazy. So my first words were, yeah, and you're kidding, right? No, you certainly wasn't kidding. So I had decided that if I hadn't said yes, then I would miss this opportunity forever, and that wouldn't be a good thing. So I decided to go ahead and do it. What did that mean? I had to leave in 3 months for Kathmandu, something I had only known about from a Bob Seger song, Kathmandu. So here I was off to Kathmandu on March the 23rd. I don't know what kind of workouts I needed to do. I needed a personal trainer. I didn't have one. What does this mean? I'd never been on a backpack trip for a weekend. I'm telling you. You know, the expedition leader, a guy named Pasquale Scotturo, a good Sicilian guy, he says, he calls me up and says, so, dude, you ready for this trip? And tell me about yourself. And what is your high altitude record? High altitude record? I've never been asked that before. So I told him the truth. I'd lived in West Virginia for a few years. Yeah, that was kind of his reaction, too. Get out here as soon as you can. We're going to climb this place called Chief Mountain, which I climbed, and it was 12,500 feet, and that was, I was excited. That was my new high altitude record. Of course, I heard them whispering with the other guys. This is kind of where they bring the newbies to Colorado. You know, Colorado's full of these 14,000 feet peaks. But I had my high altitude record. I'm getting ready. I get on a treadmill. I decided this would be a good time. Actually, better 6 months or a year ago would have been a good time to give up smoking and drinking and stuff. So I did. 3 months I got on a treadmill, and I was working out for an hour every day, and it was great. And I thought, man, I'm getting a little, you know, cocky, and I think I'm getting ready for this thing. And I called up my friend and said, let's go running, because I need to get ready for this Mount Everest expedition, you know, this trek to base camp. And I says, yeah, we'll go running. All right, well, we'll start off with 3 miles. We'll go out on the track out here at UMBC. And, boy, I got out on the track, and can I just tell you, running for real is nothing like running on a treadmill. I was like, oh, you know, like, okay, 3 miles, let's try 1 mile, and we'll run a lap, and then we'll walk a lap, and then we'll... I was in trouble. I was not ready for this trip. But suddenly on March the 23rd, off I go from Baltimore to Los Angeles airport out there, LAX. And then it was, that was 5 hours. And then it was another 12 hours from LA to Osaka, Japan for 2 hour refueling. Then from Osaka, Japan, it was another 8 hours to one night in Bangkok. I'm telling you, that's all they play in the airport in Bangkok. It was embarrassing. So we spent one night in Bangkok. And then it was 4 hours from Bangkok to Kathmandu. I didn't hear Bob Seger at the Kathmandu airport. But anyway, there we were in Kathmandu. We stayed there for a couple of days as long as we could stand it. They don't have air pollution emission standards there and dysentery and all that. Once that was done, we started our trek to Lukla. We flew fixed-wing aircraft and helicopter to Lukla in the Khumbu Mountains, in the Appalachian Mountains. Think about your world like it is, except with lots of rocks and boulders thrown and hills, and then turn that world about at a 30-degree angle. That would be my next 10 days. From Lukla at 9,000 feet to Mount Everest Base Camp at 18,000 feet, half the oxygen. Higher than any place in the contiguous United States outside of Alaska, 18,000 feet. So we would cover 2,000 to 3,000 feet each day that we trekked, and 35 miles total. It doesn't take 10 days to actually walk that, but in order to acclimatize. I was the slowest. You know, everyone was in base camp and having dinner, and 2.5 hours later, here I would come with my Sherpa protectors. But I made it, and we got into base camp. And I remember the guide telling me this last little trek. It's, you know, it's not too, there's one bad hill. You got to climb that hill, and after that, it's pretty much flat all the way into base camp. 2.5 hours. It's a breeze, no problem. Are you kidding me? 18,000 feet. There wasn't a flat piece of place to put your foot all the way into base camp. It was the closest thing to walking on the moon that I've ever seen. I mean, you're tired, you're at 18,000 feet, you can't breathe, you have a headache if you haven't drank enough water. And no, it was rocks, you know, from the size of my shoe to the size of my apartment, and trying to negotiate this, and some of them loose. It was crazy. That 2.5 hours took me about 6.5 hours. And once I got in, there was celebrating, and there was, you're at base camp, and this is great, and we're launching this. I just wanted to know where my tent was, where I stayed for the next 2 days. Eric Weinmayer and team thought, they were a little concerned that I would have to go down because they hadn't seen me and they were worried. But I carried out my duties for the next several weeks, 5 to 6 weeks, and wrote about the expedition from the point of view of a blind guy. Eric Weinmayer was the first blind guy to scale the highest point in the world, Mount Everest. He went on to complete the highest peak on all seven continents. And he did this, and I was there to tell about it on the internet. And there was three of us total. There was another blind guy who trekked up to base camp and then turned around and left. And it was tremendous. There were blind and sighted people who were partners in all aspects of this wonderful expedition that changes. There were 5 world records broken that day. And you know, Eric Weinmayer is this famous guy, and he climbed the Mount Everest, and he's a blind guy. And He's a very successful motivational speaker and gets tens of thousands of dollars to speak. I'm happy to have lunch. And your gratitude and appreciation, it's great. When Eric Weinmayer was trying to get support for this expedition, he was a little disappointed, and it really hurt Eric. Eric's an accomplished athlete. He went out there and he wrote to all his friends, well-known names in the field of mountain climbing, including a best-selling author that wrote a book about an ill-fated expedition from 1996. Maybe you've heard of him. They all said, don't do it. I've been on that mountain. It can't be done. It's crazy, even for a person with vision. Eric, you're a fine man and you're an athlete and you're all that, but don't do it. That's not what he was expecting to hear. What did they know about Eric Weinmayer? They knew that he was blind. None of these guys had climbed with him. They didn't know what his skills were. They didn't know how good a climber he was. The fact of the matter is, when you get up there at 26,000 feet, the death zone, and they have a whiteout, blizzard conditions, what are you relying on to keep going? It ain't your vision, I'm telling you. So Eric knew how to do this, and he knew how to lead his teammates to do this. But that is the public misconceptions that he faced, and similar to the ones I started telling about. One of the expedition members of our team overheard somebody from another expedition saying, boy, I'm glad I'm not on their team, on that expedition. I wouldn't want to be carrying that dead blind guy's body back to base camp. That was the attitude. So when Eric Weinmayer and his teammates stood at the top of the world and broke 5 world records, he had bragging rights to say, you said it couldn't be done. It's been done. I got to witness it and be part of that. But yet every day that I go to work or go to a restaurant or anything like that, I confront sometimes the attitudes of the public that assume things about me because I'm blind. That's okay. I can handle that. That's what I'm in the business of doing, is helping to change attitudes. So the biggest mountain that I have yet to climb, and by the way, my high altitude record is 18,000 feet, I'm here to tell you. But the biggest mountain that's out there to climb are the public misconceptions about blindness that really do deny blind people equality, opportunity, and security. For that, I can't do that alone. I need you all sitting here in the audience and anyone within earshot to be part of this expedition, because that's what's going to take to change what it means to be blind and what it means for people with disabilities in this country to have those opportunities and to realize their real potential, their real contributions in our society. That's the peak that I have yet to climb, and I'm looking for some teammates. Anybody game? Climb high.